WWR Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Cody Werner.
And I'm Judy Imasoji. This week we have media news from all around the world.
From the war in Gaza and Israel.
How many journalists have been killed in Israel's war in Gaza? Is this a war on journalists?
From Canada.
Why did the Canadian government block TikTok on its mobile devices? Is TikTok a security risk?
From Australia.
The Aussies are worried about cybersecurity and cybercrime. How bad is the threat? What is the Australian government doing about the menace of cyber attacks? Can a government protect us from the dangers of the internet with new legislation regulating big tech?
From Iran.
Has the government loosened its grip on the press? Can Iranians speak up and protest? Can journalists cover this dissent?
Back to Israel and Gaza.
Lots of disinformation and hate speech are being shared on social media because of this conflict between Israelis and Palestinians in Gaza. How are social media platforms responding to Israel's war in Gaza? Can big tech stop the hate?
From Ukraine.
Are journalists at risk covering Russia's war in Ukraine? How many journalists have been injured or killed since the war began?
From South Africa.
What are the challenges that journalists face in South Africa today? Is there still a free press ready to report the news about elections in 2024?
From South Korea.
Why is South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol trying to control public broadcasting? What's at stake in this battle over who runs television? Why does the president consider public broadcasting to be a problem in South Korea?
From China.
Is China using AI to try to control internet speech in China? Will AI tools bring internet freedom or just more surveillance and control?
All this and more coming up on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York, College at Old Westbury. My co-host, Judy Imasoji, has a report about the war on media in Gaza. Is there a war on journalists in the Gaza Strip? Are they being intentionally targeted, or are they collateral damage in the brutal Israeli bombing of Gaza? Reuters reports that the Gaza Health Ministry estimates that Israel has killed more than 16,000 people in this war to destroy Hamas. The Gaza Health Ministry claims that 70% of the dead are women and children. Can journalists cover the devastation of war without getting themselves killed in Gaza? How many journalists have been injured or killed since Israel began this retaliation for the savage Hamas attack on Israel on October 7th? Judy, what are the latest numbers for journalist casualties in Gaza, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists?
Of 61 deaths of journalists and media workers, the Committee to Protect Journalists has recorded, as of Friday, 54 Palestinian journalists, 4 Israeli and 3 Lebanese journalists have died.
Why are journalists at risk?
Journalists are at risk because it has been up to them to record and document the war while also living through it, since foreign journalists were not permitted entry into Gaza. Most Gaza journalist deaths since the war beginning, according to the nonprofit Committee to Protect Journalists in New York, occurred while journalists were carrying out their duties. Of the 50 journalists who have been killed so far as of December 3rd, 43 are categorized by the organization as being on dangerous assignment. For example, a notable Reuters reporter, Issam Abdallah, was killed in Lebanon on October 13th while filming Israeli rockets fired across the border between Israel and Lebanon. He was struck by a missile as he was with a group of journalists in southern Lebanon, close to the border town of Alma al-Shab. The strike also resulted in the injuries of 6 more journalists.
What was Israel's response to the journalists' casualties?
In the month of October 2023, Israel informed Reuters and AFP, two international news agencies, that it was unable to ensure the security of its journalists while they were working in the Gaza Strip. Declaring that it was targeting Hamas across Gaza, the Israel Defense Forces stated that the organization was conducting military activities in the vicinity of journalists and civilians. Israel was urged to look into an air attack that seriously damaged AFP's office, which is housed on the top floor of an 11-story structure on Sunday, November 4th. A strike on the offices of an international news agency sends a deeply troubling message to all journalists working in such difficult conditions in Gaza, as stated by Fabrice Fries, the head of AFP.
Are journalists being targeted in Gaza?
While it cannot be confirmed, CPJ's research so far has uncovered several types of incidents of journalists being targeted while carrying out their work in Israel in the two Palestinian territories, Gaza and the West Bank, in addition to documenting the increasing number of journalists murdered and injured. These involve many assaults, threats, online attacks, censorship, and several arrests. According to The Guardian and the Reuters news agency, eight family members of photojournalist Yasir Qadir were killed on November 13 when four missiles targeted their home in southern Gaza. The event happened 5 days after Qadir and three other photographers working in Gaza were suspected of knowing in advance about Hamas' October 7th attack on Israel, according to a report published on November 8th by Honest Reporting. Reuters and other major media outlets denied the allegations. A group of journalists also spoke out to the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate and said that while reporting from what they believed to be a safe area, Israeli forces targeted them with tear gas and unidentified bullets, even though they told the Israeli soldiers that they were journalists while displaying their media vest. For New Media Beat, I'm Judy Imasoji. Back to you, Cody.
Thanks, Judy. Let's talk about TikTok in Canada with Kristali Almanzar. Why are so many governments worried about TikTok? What has the Canadian government done about TikTok? Is Canada the only country taking steps to control access to TikTok recently? Kristali, can Canadians still use TikTok? How many TikTok users are there in Canada?
Yes, people in Canada can still use TikTok. In fact, according to TikTok statistics in Canada, TikTok has 3.2 monthly active users in Canada. 26% of online Canadians have a TikTok account, and it is the fourth most regularly used social media network in Canada. The ban was directed towards government mobile devices.
Why is Canada banning TikTok from government devices?
One of the reasons TikTok is so criticized is the fear that China's government could access personal user data information. In response to these speculations, Canada has decided to take preventative measures to ensure the security of the government's information. According to the Montreal Gazette, the security of information and the protection of data held by government agencies remains an absolute priority for the Quebec government, and that's why we're adopting this preventative measure. The cities of Vaughan and Kitchener have joined in on imposing the ban of TikTok, along with the Northwest Territories and the province of Ottawa.
How did TikTok respond to Canada's ban?
The news of the ban came as a shock, and a representative of TikTok responded to Canada's decision. According to Toronto Star, it's disappointing to see that the Ontario government has taken such an extreme approach to following the baseless trend of blocking TikTok on not only government-issued devices, but also caucus members' personal devices without citing any specific security concerns.
Was there evidence TikTok had access to government information?
While Canada did launch an investigation into TikTok, there was no proof that the security of the government's information had been compromised. According to the Toronto Star, there has been no evidence so far that the government's information has been accessed by TikTok, according to Canada's Treasury Board President, Mona Fortier.
Is TikTok only banned on government devices?
There have been conversations of expanding the ban on TikTok to schools as well. One of the main reasons for this is the concern of the privacy of younger individuals, especially since 70% of Canadian TikTok users are under the age of 40. According to the Toronto CTV News, Ontario is considering banning TikTok in public schools, Minister of Education Stephen Lachey says. The Hamilton-Wentworth District School Board has also said that it will follow Ontario's lead and make TikTok inaccessible from broad devices and within networks. We obviously share a profound concern about the privacy impacts for young people. From New Media Beats, this is Kristali Almanzar. Back to you, Cody.
Thank you, Kristali. Let's go down under for a talk about the internet in Australia. Does Australia have a major problem with cybercrime? Can a government pass legislation that will protect its citizens from cyber criminals?
Let's talk about cybercrime and internet security in Australia with Aidan Bongiorno. What can governments do to keep their netizens safe from cyber criminals and data breaches? Is this an issue for big tech or big government to solve? Aidan, can you give us an example of the kind of cybercrime that Australian government is concerned about?
Yes. So, the Australian government has recently grown concerned over the amount of cyber attacks that have occurred throughout the Pacific Island nations. Multiple businesses throughout the Pacific have been attacked by unknown threats. hacking their way into websites, gaining private and personal information, and releasing it throughout the dark web. Recently, the Australian government has set up a team of cybersecurity experts to eliminate increase of online threats throughout.
What is causing these cyber attacks?
It has been reported that most of the attacks were caused by online hackers. During the last 18 months, multiple countries throughout the Pacific Island have been attacked by cyber hackers. Most of the attacks have targeted government agencies and critical infrastructure facilities. These unknown threats have the ability to hack into government or business databases and obtain private information. If obtained, these hackers can have this information leaked or released online through the World Wide Web, or as they refer to it as the Dark Web. Tim Watts, Assistant Foreign Minister, described the cyber attacks as the fastest growing threat throughout the Pacific's national security. Very recently, multiple Australian companies were targeted by cyber criminals, which resulted in the country blaming China as a potential cause for the hacking. According to Nikkei Asia, it has recently been reported that as of June, over 94,000 cyber incidents occurred. The Australian Signals Directorate states that the damage caused by cyber criminals has increased by 14%.
Are there countries being affected?
Yes, there are definitely other countries being affected by cyber attacks. Australia, of course, being one of them, has also been affected. Very recently, a major Australian port was forced to shut down because it was being targeted by cyber criminals. The company powered down all internet connections to private unauthorized access. But Australia wasn't the only country affected by cyber criminals. In 2021, a cyber attack was reported from Papua New Guinea, where the country's government pay system was hit. The attackers, who demanded that the country pay them in Bitcoin, were able to disable the system. John Pordari, the finance minister and acting treasurer, discusses that the government refuses to pay a single ransom to the hackers, following that by confirming that the system had been fully restored. He says, and I quote, "The government and the people of Papua New Guinea can be assured that the government financial services will continue as usual." Cybersecurity and Home Affairs Minister Claire O'Neill spoke out about the dangers of cyber attacks. "We can't have a situation where we have data flying around the country, where we have critical infrastructure starting to fail. We have small businesses and citizens who are continually telling us that they feel vulnerable and unable to cope with cyber threats themselves."
How is the Australian government dealing with the attacks?
Many officials in Australia have become fully aware about the increase of cyber attacks throughout the Pacific. The Australian government has been sending out response teams to only the Pacific Island countries. The Australian government also reported that they will also present cyber health checks to small businesses affected by cyber attacks, increase funding for cyber law enforcement, and introduce mandatory reporting of online attacks under a major security overhaul. The Australian Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, commented about what the national security means to online attacks. "Military assets in the traditional sense, but increasingly, we're talking about cyber because of the economic impact that it can have. With Australia being a big country in the Pacific, all of these tiny islands in that region turn to the Australian government for protection. While the numbers of cyber attacks increase, the Australian government is putting in full effort to hopefully decrease the amount of attacks throughout the Pacific nation." For New Media Beat, I am Aidan Mongiorno. Back to you, Judy.
Thanks, Aidan. Iran has a problem with protest and dissent. There is very little press freedom in Iran. Can the government keep a lid on the protesters and the media? Michael Amato has a report about press freedom in Iran today. Michael, is this a recent problem? Has something happened recently in Iran that has led to an increasing crackdown on the press?
Reporters within Iran are being detained for lots of reasons. It is clear that the Iranian government and Iranian authorities are doing everything they possibly can to restrict the information that is put out by the media. The International Federation of Journalists claims at least 100 journalists have been arrested and imprisoned in Iran in the past year. A majority of the charges these journalists are facing have to do with propaganda and being seen as a threat to Iran and its security. Not only are these journalists being detained and arrested, but some of them are also being exiled or sent away from their homes due to the way the government sees their actions. The International Federation of Journalists also says at least 20 journalists have been exiled due to arrest, summonses, and long-term prison sentences. Iranian authorities detain these journalists give them hefty sentences, or force them to leave their jobs or homes due to the way they feel about their media output.
Who is Alaya Mohammadi and Noor Hamedi?
Alaya Mohammadi is an Iranian journalist who has been held for nearly the past year due to her coverage of women in Iran. According to Reporters Without Borders, she awaits a verdict in her trial with her twin sister, fellow journalist Elnaz Mohammadi, has just received a three-year sentence, or suspended jail sentence. Noor Hamedi is also an Iranian journalist who was in jail due to her coverage of a controversial case in Iran. Both of these journalists played major roles in reporting about Mahsa Amani's death. Mahsa Amani was a 22-year-old Iranian woman who unfortunately died under suspicious circumstances. When given the charges, both journalists denied when Mohammadi claiming, "I can say with pride that I never had any links with foreign governments and that my loyalty is to the people because I regard myself as their mouthpiece."
What does the future of media look like in Iran?
After seeing the way the Iranian government and authorities handled the Mahsa Amani case, it can be seen that the future of free media in Iran is not looking bright. The Middle East Institute says Iran will likely ramp up its use of social media surveillance and facial recognition technology to track and target people who violate strict modesty and dress codes. This shows the extent that the Iranian government will go to in order to maintain their standards. Iranian journalists are being forced into making the incredibly tough decision to either stay in the country and continue with these hardships or flee the country altogether. When in Iran, these journalists are essentially seen as the enemy and as a threat. Ultimately, they aren't even seen as citizens of Iran. For New Media Beat, I'm Michael Amato. Back to you, Judy.
Thank you, Michael. The war in Ukraine is still a bloody stalemate. How dangerous is it to be a reporter on the front lines in Ukraine? Daniel Jefferson is reporting about journalists covering Russia's war in Ukraine. Daniel, is the war in Ukraine a dangerous place for journalists? Is there a recent news story that illustrates the problem?
Yes, the war in Ukraine is dangerous for journalists. Out of the many media workers covering the war, 17 journalists have been killed so far during it. Most of these deaths came from the first few weeks of the conflict.
Why is there so much violence against journalists in Ukraine?
Journalists are very influential in propaganda and getting the people to side with which side of the war. Killing, threatening, and disappearing journalists during a war is not new because of the power reporters have. The Russians know this, and there have been reports that people have seen Russian military actively seeking out journalists in East Ukraine and targeting them, which is a war crime.
What is the government doing to protect the journalists?
Ukraine has taken several measures to protect journalists, including passing laws that criminalize attacks on journalists, establishing mechanisms for reporting threats, providing security training, and actively investigating and prosecuting cases of violence against journalists to ensure accountability. Additionally, they've collaborated with international organizations to enhance safety measures and support for journalists working in conflict zones.
Where does Ukraine rank in journalist safety?
The safety of journalists in Ukraine has faced challenges due to the ongoing conflict. According to various reports by organizations like Reporters Without Borders, Ukraine's ranking in journalist safety can fluctuate, mostly because of the reporters in the middle of the war zone. From New Media Beat, this is Daniel Jefferson.
Let's talk more about the challenges that journalists face trying to cover the news in other parts of the world. War zones are very dangerous, but even nations that are not at war can be difficult places for working journalists. Amadi Lee Keane is here to talk to news media and democracy in South Africa.
Financial difficulties, digital corruption, and acts of violence and impunity all present serious obstacles for journalists in South Africa and threaten the values of democracy and press freedom. Governments, media outlets, and civil society must work together to combat these dangers and provide conditions that protect journalists' safety, security, and independence. Then and only then will journalists be able to carry out their mandate to enlighten, educate, and hold the powerful accountable, thus eventually fostering a lively and knowledgeable society.
What is the current state of impunity for crimes against journalists and media workers in South Africa, and what are some of the key challenges in addressing this issue effectively?
South Africa's flourishing democracy and impact of media and journalists work in tandem to provide a healthy political, economic, and social future for the nation. However, the continuous wave of harassment, intimidation, and criminalization of journalism impedes journalists' ability to perform their duty to inform the public while educating themselves in the process. Tabani Moyo has spoken about the unethical matter and emphasized that journalists shouldn't be attacked for, quote-unquote, holding up a mirror to society, or better yet, shedding light on the inadequacies of the nation. This only goes against South Africa's morals of remaining committed to supporting a free and independent press. Journalists, just like any and all of us, are human and have rights that should reflect the fairness, safety, and duty of their profession.
How have digital platforms and technologies contributed to the rise of threats against journalists and media organizations in South Africa, and what steps are being taken to mitigate these risks?
Although digital platforms such as social media serve as an open mic for many people to speak their minds and express representation and provide valid information, the rate of digital corruption depends on the intentions of the audience. The country has over 25 million social media users, so digital influence is very relevant to the cognizance of the public. To the matters of the nation. In regards to the upcoming election, for example, many unethical strategies have been exposed in the midst of the campaign, such as hashtagging and sock puppet accounts that have falsely informed the public, which has only made it more difficult for journalists to prove to be reliable sources of information. Although such strategies might be resisted by South Africa's strong and diverse heritage media, which has been held accountable for many years, journalists need to understand that by interacting with popular hashtags designed to mislead, may unintentionally be amplifying fake information.
What are some of the main financial challenges faced by journalists and media outlets in South Africa, and how do these challenges impact the quality and diversity of media coverage in the country?
A fair amount of the population face the dilemma, along with confirming the trust in valid media, is paying for subscriptions to media sources. However, all South Africans aren't financially fortunate to take care of their priorities and pay for their media subscriptions. Therefore, this trend has slowed the flow of revenue for different houses of media and has made radio a more convenient selection to stay educated and informed on the state of the nation. This is News Media B. I'm Amadi Lee Kane. Back to you.
Thank you, Amadi. Akash Singh has reports about public broadcasting in South Korea. Is President of South Korea Yoon Suk-yeol trying to control public broadcasting? Is there a political debate over his attempts to regulate public TV? Akash, what do we need to know about broadcasting in South Korea to understand this controversy? Tell us about public broadcasting in South Korea. What is this network called?
In South Korea, concerns have arisen regarding press freedom within public broadcasting. This has sparked debates about the independence of journalism and the potential impact on the diversity of perspectives presented to the public. Critics argue that such control may compromise the integrity of news coverage, raising questions about the balance between governmental influence and the essential principles of a free and unbiased press in the country.
How are funding cuts affecting the way public broadcasting agencies operate?
Public broadcasting agencies such as KBS relied on the government for the majority of their annual budgets. According to a Public Media Alliance article, these broadcasting agencies' financial stability and ability to operate are being called to question with the situation of their government funding being cut.
Thank you, Akash. China wants to be an AI superpower. Will the Chinese government use the latest AI technology to build its economy, or will it use AI to limit online freedoms? Will AI become another way that the government limits and shapes public expression online? Jalen Gonzalez has been doing research for New Media Beat. Jalen, what was the first news story that drew your attention to this issue?
My attention was first brought to this with a news article that talked about how the Chinese government wanted to take over the chatbots in order to have more control. Adding on to this, the government wants to control artificial intelligence in order to control even more aspects of the Chinese citizens' lives on the web.
Will controlling AI affect China's internet freedom?
Many countries fear the effects of AI and what it can accomplish. Through many of these technological advances, people believe that AI will eventually be able to control many aspects on the web for the Chinese citizens. Restrictions can be created in order to block certain programs, and this means that AI can be told to do something if programmed correctly. Through the advances of AI, similarly to the advances in gaming, the Chinese Communist Party wants more control over their people, and they believe the first step to this is to control chatbots.
How would the Chinese government control AI and the web?
Along with controlling AI, the government also wants to control aspects on the web, with web browsing being limited as it is. Controlling AI would be a step forward in controlling the citizens of China and regulating things they do. Control on both the web and AI could possibly lead to the Chinese citizens' total support for the government. With a flourishing economy, the Chinese citizens support the Communist Party entirely. However, controlling AI and the web could possibly lead to a collapse or some kind of rift in the economy, which could affect the people. From New Media Beat, I'm Jalen Gonzalez. Back to you, Cody.
Thanks, Jalen. That's all for this week. Thanks for listening to New Media Beat. Thanks to our co-producer, Alex Hodgko, our engineer, Demetric Hilton, and my co-host, Judy Amasogi.
Thanks, Cody. Today we heard reports from Aiden Bongiorno, Crystal Lee Almanzar, Amadi Lee Kane, Daniel Jefferson, Judy Amasogi, Akash Singh, Jalen Gonzalez, and Michael Amato. New Media Beat is brought to you by OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest post at newmediabeat.org, where you can listen to all our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.